The city of Zion had been saying, Jehovah has abandoned me, and my Lord has forgotten me. Isaiah 49 and 14, the Word Green Version from 2003, our daily scripture for today, little children. So those were the two quotes. Quote, Jehovah has abandoned me, and quote, my Lord has forgotten me. God's own people were saying that because God's people were referred to at times as the city of Zion. That city which was the place conquered by King David. Certainly a very long time after Israel had conquered the Promised Land. But it became a way of referring to God's people by calling them Zion. And that was just, it was also called the City of David, which was the part of Jerusalem. It was just one section of Jerusalem which was conquered by King David. And if you watch videos these days on YouTube, you may find a lot of work is still being done on the site of Jerusalem. They're digging for evidence even now, even today as we speak. They continue to dig for evidence of the time of King David and all of that time period, which included the Israelite kings from the time of King David and Saul and all the way down. Probably even, well, they're not as interested in King Saul, perhaps, because Jerusalem was a place where David made his kingship after King Saul. I'm trying to think. Well, we don't know much about King Saul in Jerusalem, I don't think. We don't know much about him associated with that particular city, that is Jerusalem or Zion. But today in our Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express articles, our study, the Tower of Babel, we have a picture, a painting from an unknown German master of the Tower of Babel. I guess we should make it bigger. There it is. So the style of construction shown in this painting is very probably not going to be similar to the style of ancient times, but what style it represents, it might is much more modern, I would have to say, probably something like, well, I'm just guessing, you know, it looks like Gothic or something, or the time, I don't know, whoever, we don't, okay, at the end of the 16th century it was painted. Yeah, I would say the architecture depicted there is maybe from a slightly more ancient time period than 16th century, but I don't know. Couldn't say for sure. But it's not as ancient as the most ancient King Nimrod, for example. It's not as ancient as him. Oh, I was thinking about something yesterday that was fascinating. I was studying the time period of Nimrod as Enmer Kar, having ruled, as we determined, somewhere we calculated 14 years for the king called Enmer Kar, but we haven't. Well, and we talked about that. I think it was in the Wild Road article. That's where that calculation was, and I was looking at that yesterday. Maybe we'll have time today to talk more about it, but when you think of Nimrod before the dispersion at the Tower of Babel, you, and think of the king called Nimrod in Mr. Jackson's book, who ruled 6 years, and his successor was called Evecarus, I think was his name. And he ruled 7.5 years after Nimrod ruled 6 years, the total being 13.5, which correlates well to 14 years for Enmer Kar. And it made me wonder, for the first time, maybe it was possible for Nimrod to have been the same person as Evecarus, just his name changed after the dispersion. And so his rule may have been 14 years, broken into two parts under two different names. And that's something I'd never thought of that. It had never occurred to me. But it's an interesting thought. For the first time, to have a thought for the first time, then there's a lot of time it takes to meditate on that, to see whether... just find out what all the ramifications are of that. Now let's read in chapter 5, paragraph 8 of the Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express. As Christians, we pray for kings and those in high station, 1 Timothy 2 and 2. Yeah, we pray for kings. And we do that, because we care about everybody, but also that we may be free to enjoy calm, godly lives. The connection of Nimrod to Assyria is biblical. Micah 5 and 6. We should look that up. We can look up Timothy 2. Micah 5 and 6? Is that what it was? And they will actually shepherd the land of Assyria with the sword, and the land of Nimrod in its entrances. And he will certainly bring about deliverance from the Assyrian. These are the seven shepherds mentioned in verse 5. And he will certainly bring about deliverance from the Assyrian. That is, Jehovah will, in verse 4. When he comes into our land, that is, when Nimrod comes into our land, and when he treads upon our territory, Micah 5 and 6. And the origin of nationhood lies in the 28th century BCE, as indicated by the eclipse of Nimrod, Thoth 1, 2774. The pharaoh called Djer has been identified with Athothis. There's an ivory tablet, quote, ivory tablet from the reign of Djer, which supposedly indicates the beginning of a Sothic cycle, end quote, that Wikipedia Sothic cycle puts at 2773 BCE, July 17th. And I checked today, and since October 25th, the last time I stored that file, they've added the date July 17th onto the year 2773, which was there with the year only, without the date, a mere 3 days ago. So that's been changed, which that's very encouraging, as though they are following the article that I'm reading here today. But if you look back in the older versions of the Wikipedia article, they actually, some of the older versions definitely include this date, July 17th, also. So it was taken out at some point and put back in again just recently. But, you know, if it occurred in 2773, it would have been July 17th. Because Thoth, the first day of Thoth, shifts one quarter of a day per year in the Egyptian calendar. And Thoth 1... slipping around in my chair. Hang on a second. Got to fix that. Thoth 1 fell on July 18th in 2774 BCE. And July 17th in 2773 BCE, the annular solar eclipse over Noah's Ark in Uzengili on July 18th, 2774 BCE, actually occurred on Thoth 1. Very near in latitude to the place expected from the Egyptian Sothic cycle. And it was, according to Solex 10, observable there. As the Egyptian king Narmer, that is Nimrod, preceded Athothis, that is Thoth, who invented writing, the timing is right on, with the proviso that this start for the Egyptian calendar was set prior to the beginning of the Egyptian nationhood. The beginning of the Egyptian calendar necessitated that a means be devised immediately for the recounting of events. Wikipedia tells us on the rarity of total solar eclipses. It has been estimated that they recur at any given place only once every 370 years on average. End quote. And heliacal rising of the star Sothis, with heliacal meaning at dawn, on the same day as an annular solar eclipse is exceedingly rare, as seen from the rarity of the solar eclipse itself. More research is needed into the nature of solar eclipses, but even a partial eclipse, it grows clear, is unlikely to happen on the same day as an heliacal rising of this star. The eclipse was partial in Egypt, annular from Noah's Ark. It is of interest whether the annularity of the eclipse at the Ark site was important to any observers further south. It is perhaps safer to view this as an unimportant detail. The advanced science that is evidenced by the construction of Noah's Ark, when we believe it, easily accounts for this. When we believe the science of astronomy to have been very advanced amongst the early inhabitants of Shinar, it is an even easier thing to imagine how calendars were corrected. We must understand that while we may learn anything we set our minds upon, it is a different thing entirely to learn at one and the same time everything our minds see. As the southern part of Shinar is near Egypt for latitude, the rising of Sothis or Sirius is nearly in common to them. This brings us then to a king known as En-Merkar, in brackets, En-Mekar, without the R. And that is the end of our study of the Ark of Urartu for today. So these were the thoughts going through my mind as I was making these discoveries back in the year 2010 about the eclipse of Nimrod at the Ark site, with that name having been given to it by yours truly. I called it the eclipse of Nimrod because it helped us to see more precisely what the time period was for the beginning of the Egyptian calendar, seeing as the eclipse was visible as an annular eclipse over the Ark site and as a partial eclipse in Egypt itself. And, of course, Shinar was reasonably close to Egypt in terms of latitude also. So, and whereas the Ark site is quite a bit further north, we saw there would be a difference of 69 years between the rising of Sothis at Nekin in Egypt, which is near Thebes, or Luxor today it's called. It's near that place. And Nekin in Egypt, and comparing that to the Ark site, was a 69-year difference in when the rising of Sothis would occur on Thoth 1. So, on which is the Egyptian calendar, day 1, Thoth 1. So, and the 69 years we correlated to the Kitab al-Magal, which said that Nimrod ruled for 69 years. That was another thing that seemingly I just discovered as I was reading this time. I don't think I noticed the 69 years correlation to Nimrod when I first made that calculation. But I was very occupied at the time with all of these things, studying all of this chronology when I wrote this article. So maybe we can go to that, some of the other study I was doing yesterday now, if I can find it. Wild Road Ahead to History. Uh-oh, it's just a different size. Is that Wild Road? Yeah. So let's look up Enmer Carr. Right. And see, his name occurs 12 times here. So it should be possible to find something about this. You would think, there we go, yeah. So I ended up calculating Enmer Carr as year 1, 2751. Not sure how I did that from this. Here it is here. Yeah, it explains it. Yeah. Now look, this paragraph explains it. Paragraph 611. Of Wild Road Ahead to History. The article that we studied previously. One of the ones that we studied previously before we studied Trojan War. That article we studied, the Wild Road Ahead to History article. The date of it, it says there, the chapter 6, paragraph 11 of that article, the date of Nimrod appears to be closely connected in timing to that of the post-diluvial kingdom of Egypt and the dispersion of mankind during the period of the tower's construction at Babel or Babel. I'm conflicted in saying Babel or Babel, so I couldn't say either at the moment, but in Shinar associated to Nimrod is this Tower of Babel, right? And the period of the tower's construction is connected to the early kings of Egypt, apparently, very clearly, because there's no other, you know, I mean, we talk about this on several occasions in the articles, but we're not going to dwell on that right now. This is founded upon associations of Nimrod to Osiris, Narmer, and Menes, the earliest of the Egyptian kings. So that's one reason, it's obvious, right? That's a good reason. There are many reasons why we think this, I believe, but it's a very ancient time period, right? So we can't have absolutely rock-solid reasons. But the Sumerian king, Enmerkar, ruled at Uruk, or Unug, three reigns before Gilgamesh, who was a contemporary of Aga of Kish, according to that famous work called the Epic of Gilgamesh. And it may be calculated from the reigns of Sumerian kings as recorded on the Sumerian king list, when Aga and also Enmerkar ruled, provided we know two things. One, we must know the starting point of the kings that preceded Aga, and two, the meaning of the word year, as there are kings ruling for as many as, quote, 1,200 years, end quote, when each year is taken to be one day in a lunar month. What? Let's see. That's not right. Oh, maybe it is. Hang on a second. Yeah. Yeah, that is right. Yeah. I mean, that is what I did. Just trying to figure out if that was, if I wrote that correctly. But yeah, that seems right. So each year is taken to be one day in a lunar month. That's kind of crazy. Why is that? And then divide by... That's not really, that's not written correctly. Yeah, it's got to be interpreted correctly, but it's written. So each rule, 1,200 years it was spoken of as being, we divided it by the number of days in a lunar month, which is 29. I just woke up, that's the problem with speaking. 29.530588 is the number of days in a lunar month on average. When we divide that number, or divide 1,200 by that number, or whatever the rain length was by that number, we get a new number. So every standard year is multiplied by 29.5 is what we're saying here to give this bigger number. So it's as though it's not a literal lunar month. It's some kind of a factor. Why? So wait a minute. Okay. Why would they do that? We haven't tried to figure out why they would do that. With all of the new rains lasting less than 40 years, that's what happens. If you divide all of the rains that were given, the largest one of which was 1,200 years, divide them by this number 29.5, and you get rains that are less than 40 years, which is more reasonable, so it seems like maybe that's the right number to divide these things by. Because how could they rule 1,200 years? Now, this is still what we did. What I did was questionable there, but I just did it to see what would happen, to try and find a way to convert these numbers into something more understandable to us. Now, the choice of 29.5, here's the reason. The choice of 29.5 is that it's the only astronomical constant known on Earth that would be about this size. That's the reason. It's not a very good reason, but that's the reason. Two, we require a starting point for the calculations. That's the second thing. We are blessed with the deluge date of 3282 BCE in the BG, which we've been mentioning quite frequently in the Ark of Urartu article. A date by God's grace given to us uniquely. The starting point we have is 3281 BCE, the end of the deluge in the BG, the Blessed Genealogy, as the earliest kings of Kish ruled, quote, after the flood, end quote, as the record appears to say. And the Wikipedia article on the kings of Sumeria, Sumerian king list, has borne that out over the years of reviewing that article. I've reviewed that article over the years since I wrote the article, The Ark of Urartu. And the Sumerian Kings List has mentioned the flood, okay? Although this is not strictly consistent with a global deluge, it just says after the flood, you know. And it doesn't mention the Ark landing in Turkey or anything. A later corruption of the record is possible, we assume, but it results when we do this calculation using these assumptions in Enmerkar being dated as 2751 BCE, year one. Okay, that's how it was done. So that's explained in the Wild Road Ahead to History article, which you may already know if you were with us when we studied the Wild Road article. The videos for which may or may not still be on the website in the JW box directory of the time period when we were studying, from the time period when we studied the Wild Road. What time is it now? Okay, yeah. I mean, you can find it if you go back and search for the Wild Road article in the video or audio files. But the significance of this date, right, is marked also by the year one given by Abel Faraghi. Reading on now in Wild Road, paragraph 612. The learned Armenian historian of the 13th century CE for Nimrod's reign, as from 531 years after the deluge, which in our chronology, the Blessed Genealogy, is also 2751 BCE. That's pretty remarkable that that coincided. This is the date actually for the dispersion, says Abel Faraghi. Said to be one of the most learned and versatile men from the Syriac Orthodox Church. See, that was an amazing thing that we discovered, in a sense, by dividing these numbers by 29 and a half. The number we got using our chronology and also using the number of years of each king for the year one of Enmerkar turned out to be 2751. And Enmerkar, we think, was Nimrod, right? And so that coincides with the exact calculation, 3282 minus 531. 3282 minus 531. 2751. It's astounding to get. So that seems to prove what we said about this idea of dividing things by 29 and a half. It seemed to prove it, that it was, there was some point that it was correct, or that, you know, there was some good reason to do it. But, I mean, I just didn't really expect anything to happen like that. I mean, I didn't do that. I couldn't have known that that would happen. Nobody's that smart. You don't just come up with numbers because you're so clever that you can force everything to fit into your theory. Come on. Nobody does that. It just happens, or it doesn't happen. It's either the will of God or it's not the will of God. So that's the way things are. And it turned out that evidently that method of dividing the years of these rulers by 29 and a half gave a crazy correspondence that seemed to prove it, that it was the right thing that we did, that I did. So anyway, it's pretty astounding. But there's more to this Enmerkar. We do have more time, I think. That's all. That's right. Jackson talks about a 22-year time lag in paragraph 812 of Wild Road. 22 years later, he said, Egypt's rule began, then what happened in Shinar, like there was a 22-year delay or something. That's what he said. Well, we're not going to get into that, I don't think, right now, unless I can think of something new right now. But 14 years was the adjusted reign of Enmerkar. Where's that from? This is a long paragraph, 812, still 812. Fourteen years is the adjusted Sumerian reign of Enmerkar. Yeah, when we divided his number of years by that number, 29 and a half, we get 14 years for his reign, you see. So that's remarkable because the 14 years that began in 2751, right? 2751 minus 14. Get out your calculator. 2737 is when that 14 years ends in the BCE time period, and 2737 is 43 years after the death of Shem. in 2780. And we would have believed that Nimrod might become a rebel after Shem died, because Shem was the patriarch who was favored by his father Noah. And so that makes some sense also. So everything seems to fit really well with this 2751. And if Nimrod ruled 14 years, and those years end in 2737, which they do, that's pretty astounding, because that agrees exactly with year one of Shennong in the Chinese chronology. And Shennong was the emperor who fought with Qi Yu, whom we identified as Nimrod. And they had a battle, and maybe that was where Nimrod died, was in that battle, or something associated with that battle, or shortly thereafter. Whether Hake was the one who killed that particular Nimrod or not. But 2737 is the correct date in the chronology of China for the Emperor Shennong to have begun his reign at that point. He was a descendant of Shem, if he was the one we identified him as, Shelah, who's in the lineage of Shem. Everything fit perfectly in this calculation, which just is beyond anyone's sort of dreams. But the Bronze Age, but it was still hard to believe because it's so far ago, so far in the past. Since these dates are wholly consistent with Bronze Age dating, it makes it also consistent with the Bronze Age, right? That's the thing. So, you know, that the Bronze Age began after the Ark landed, which would make sense because everything was wiped out. And we have these huge, hugely advanced civilizations that have been discovered on Earth all around the world that must have existed before the deluge, that are so advanced technologically that it's scary to even start studying that. But it's October 28th, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 1945 hours. North American Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. And thank you so much for listening and watching. I love you very much. And in my behalf, this is Liv Dusty. This is Cassie saying bye for now. That was, I don't know what paragraph it was. Oh, yeah. We still have another minute, so I can go back to that article and find out where it is here. There we are. I think it's paragraph 8, wasn't it? Yeah. That was paragraph 8 of chapter 5 of the Ark of Urartu to the Orient Express. I'm just wrapped up in down. I'm just keeping warm here because it's cooler right now. And I just woke up, so the room hasn't warmed up yet very much. But it will be warmer. I'll have to start burning wood at some point, I think. But that's it for today. Our study continues. I love you. And my day is beginning for right now for me.